The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulturist Phil Rushing. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, man. It's a good weekend ahead. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. You got Easter eggs to hide and all that stuff for your kids?
Of course, man. We, you know, we have to do that and let them have their fun. And we got the Easter speeches for church and all kind of things.
All righty. Well, it's gonna be a good weekend here too in Mississippi. Louisiana, Arkansas, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi. This, you know, our listening audience. And if you're listening online from farther away, we got beautiful weather here in the South. It does not get better than this weekend.
Yeah, this weekend is great. But before, I mean, earlier this week we were in the 30s, but that's just Mississippi though.
Yeah. And matter of fact, North Mississippi has some frost. You know, traditionally we always wait till, in the South we say wait till Good Friday to plant. You know, that's just one of those folk things. Up north they say wait till Memorial Day, because it's still cold up there. And a lot of people have been planting early because it felt good. And they put plants out in the dirt and you know, wipe their hands off and go back in and feel good. And the plants doesn't hang on. Our roots are in the dirt and it's cold and wet. And so I get a lot of calls, a lot of emails this time of year, Java, from people saying, why are my beans not looking good? Because it just all stunned. Because their roots are in cold dirt. And it doesn't really start warming up until right about now. So one of the things that we hear a lot of, these folk myths, Java, and, you know, people say you're not supposed to plant stuff till the ear, till the leaves of a pecan tree are the size of a mouse's ear. You know, I mean, I've heard all this stuff. One, and there's a couple of really good ones. One is remember last fall we cut up some persimmon seeds, spoon, knife, or fork?
Yes.
Well, spoon, all of them here in central Mississippi, it says spoon. It said shoveling snow. We got nothing. So sorry about that. That groundhog guy, we ain't paying attention to groundhog guy up in Massachusetts or whatever. Here's another one. It thundered in February. And everybody says thunder in February is going to snow in April.
What?
I'm just saying, and it thundered in April, so, you know, we're going to see. Well, I've got a new one, and we could use some help on this. Anybody who's got some good folk sayings, give us a call and share them with you. I made one up, though. Saw one the other day, and this is mine. When you see a buzzard eating a dead possum on the side of the road, it's time to plant for summer. What do you think? You think it'll catch on?
I mean, you can see that any time of year.
If you're in the South.
In the South, you can see that any time of the year.
Well, that means it's pretty accurate. But anyway, we got a lot of stuff to chat about. I've got some announcements, some things coming up. We're going to start out in South Haven, all the way up to the top of Mississippi, talk to Rebecca. Rebecca, good morning.
Good morning, Felder. So good to hear you.
Thank you.
To call you for 2 weeks. And
we had drive time, but here we are. Here we are. What's up?
All right. Redbud trees, they volunteer. And when they come up where they want to come up.
Yeah.
And, I think they're gorgeous. But sometimes I want to give one to somebody, and I'm trying to figure out how to move it. And ideally, you would come out 8 to 12 inches and dig you a big big ball,
yeah,
so he wouldn't get bare roots. But the tree didn't get that, so they came up right by another tree, and
yeah,
you can't come out in 8 inches. I'm like, How do you transplant a red bud without killing it?
Well, this is a really good question. By the way, I was raised on a tree nursery where we planted acorns in the fall. And then the next spring we planted the trees out in the fields, and 5, 6, 7 years later we came out. We planted, grew, and dug trees from fields. So I've done this a jillion times. Here's the deal. A small tree, like a redbud, where there's, it's a year or so old, let's say up about a foot, maybe knee-high tall, you can bare root that. It's not that big a deal. Don't try to get a big root ball. If it's bigger than that, if you can't put your hand, if it's like an inch in diameter, its roots are going to be way out from the trunk anyway. So when you cut it, you're basically cutting off all the arms and just leaving the shoulders. See, so the smaller tree, the more proportion of its roots you get with it. So as long as it's, a year or so old, you can just dig it up, replant it, or pot it up real quick, and it probably won't miss a beat. So,
What if it just came up? It just came up this spring.
Well, you can't say, the past couple of few weeks?
Well, I guess it's been there over the winter.
Yeah. If it grew
knee high.
It's proud of last year. Yeah, no problem. Just dig it up as best you can. Try to get as many roots as you can, and be ready to pot it up, to plant it in a pot or something, just as soon as you dig it up. In other words, don't leave it out in the air for half an hour. Just go ahead and dig it up, put it in a pot with some potting soil, water it, and it'll do fine.
Okay. Is there a certain amount of water that it needs?
Yeah, a good soaking when it gets dry.
Right. But when you plant it, do you need to water it every week?
Good soaking when it gets dry. And that could be twice a week in the middle of the summer. It could be every 2 weeks in the wintertime. It depends on, there's no set rules, what I'm saying. Depends on type of soil, size of plant, temperatures, all that kind of stuff. So let's just say when you water it, give it a good soaking, and then don't keep it wet. When it starts to get dry, water it again really good. That's just a good rule of thumb for tomatoes or red buds or any kind of plant. Good soaking when you do water. Try not to keep it wet.
But okay, if I could ask you about a second
sure
plant, it's like, because I have killed these, but I got one.
What is
from
it?
Somebody's yard.
What kind of plant?
Camellia.
Okay.
Yeah. I got it from somebody's yard, and it was their mother's, and it's lasted for generations. But it looks like, and now that I'm retired, I can do this. I'll look out at 8 o'clock. I said, does that have sun or shade? At 9 o'clock, does that have sun or shade? It looks like I planted it somewhere it's only got 4 or 5 hours of sun. And camellias don't like football field sun, but I was wondering, do I need to put it a little sunnier?
No. You. Okay, now that you're retired, I can say this. You're overthinking this. Camellias grow in broiling hot sun. They grow in 100% shade. They do best when they get a little protection for the hot midday sun, but they'll do fine as long as they got a good root system. So as long as it's growing fine, a lot of people lost camellias because of the bad weather. So if it looks okay, I would not mess with it at all. I'd go to a garden center. I'd get me a little concrete bunny and put up under there, something interesting. So that the plant can come and go. When it blooms, you'll notice it. When not, you got a little bunny to look at. In other words, don't worry too much about it. Not too much fertilizer.
Okay, well, I got some creeping phlox to put with it.
That'd be fine. That'd be perfect.
That'd help it.
That'd be perfect. Now, and by the way, when it comes to red buds, they come up from seed just like any other native plant. See, and wherever the seeds land, that's where the thing sprouts. So if you've got one coming up by a tree, you probably have some others somewhere that would be better candidates for moving, and just get rid of the one that's growing up next to the tree. So don't feel like you got to save every one. They're not little kittens.
No, but they are pretty.
Yeah, they are. But they're a native plant. There's plenty of them. And so move the ones that are good candidates, and the rest of them, you just got to harden your heart to be a gardener.
Just cut it off.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's good to have you back taking calls, Phil.
Thanks, Rebecca. Appreciate you.
I'm still looking for you to come up here.
I'm actually going to be in DeSoto County on April the 23rd doing a thing for the I forgot what town. Hernando. Anyway, I'll get more details, but I'm doing a thing for the Garden Club on April the 23rd in DeSoto County. That's just south of, well, you're in DeSoto County.
Yeah, is that open to the public?
Yeah. Details later. I don't have them with me.
All right.
All righty.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye. Ooh, I stumbled around a lot on that one, Java. stumbled all around on that one.
Well, Rebecca really showed us how much, I don't know, we may need to start opening the phone lines during drive time.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
We were missed, or you were missed.
Yeah, you know, I put something on Mississippi Gardening Facebook saying, are there some questions that I can answer because we can't take calls? And I got something like 750. Anyway, let's go to Amite County, or is it Amite County? Jan, is it Amite County?
Yes, it's Amite County.
Okay, and you got what kind of bushes you got fungus on them?
Okay, well, I got one of those camellias, too, and it's older than I am, and I won't tell you how old I am. I have a sweet olive, my azaleas, and my cat jasmines, or gardenias, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
I have got some kind of a fungus on the stems and the limbs.
Kind of gray gray and scaly and furry looking.
Right.
I know right what it is. And this is good news. Those are called lichens, L-I-C-H-E-N-S. Lichens they're a sort of combination of fungus and algae. It's a peculiar type of growth, and they're all over the world. They're even in Antarctica. Reindeer eat lichens. They grow on plants, not in plants, and they grow on tombstones, on bridge rails. I even have a mass of growing on a glass bottle on my bottle tree. So they grow on things. They're not a problem. However, Jan, if you see them on a plant and they're crushing on, there's a lot of them, they're telling us that the plant's not growing very well. It's slow. It's not, you know, as plants grow bigger, their trunks get bigger around, and they shuck the lichens off. So if they're really heavy crusted, they're telling us that the plants need a little help, a little fertilizer, some pruning, or they're getting old. Sometimes we see them on plants that are dead or dying, but it's a coincidence. So they're perfectly healthy plants. But if they're really crushing on there, you need to throw a little fertilizer out there, maybe do some pruning, something to get the plants back in real good vigor. The lichens are telling you plants aren't growing real fast. That's all.
Okay, so that's all I need is fertilizer and a little pruning.
Yeah. You could take old plants and cut them back to knee high. You know, I'm not saying you ought to do that to that old camellia, but you can cut them knee high and they sprout out stronger and faster than ever. It's called rejuvenation pruning. We do that a lot on those azaleas, and they come back stronger than ever, and ain't no lichens on them at all. But anyway,
excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Zelda. I know you're
No, keep going. What?
Yeah. What worried me is, on all the plants, I've got dead limbs.
Yeah.
On them.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the problem. The lichens are the symptom. They're not causing is what I'm saying. So if you got dead limbs, and this is routine. I work with historic landscapes from Louisiana all the way to Virginia. Old historic landscapes, and the horticulture there routinely cut old plants back to start them over again. It's called rejuvenation, and we've had bad weather, we've had hard freezes, we've had extreme deep drought, we've had heavy rain. All these things damage roots, and the older plants sometimes need to be cut back to sort of stimulate some strong new growth. I wish we could do that to our kids or our old dog or something, but sometimes you just got to cut plants back and sort of get them started over again. And a little fertilizer wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Now, in fertilizer, that's a question I need to ask you. I had my granddaddy was a horticulturist, graduated from university and
he knew his stuff. Yeah,
right. He knew his stuff, and he used Epsom salt on everything.
Well, and it, because he didn't have the internet, so he could look it up and find out. There's no need to do that. Epsom salts is magnesium sulfate. We have plenty of magnesium. I've tested soil for Mississippi State for years. We have plenty of magnesium in our soils. Epsom salts is not necessary. And I'm real sure that a lot of people are going to argue with me. I don't argue. I stay on the side of science. So Epsom salts is just a little minor element. It's sort of like fixing a salad with nothing but olives. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's probably because he put all this Epsom salt out.
Not necessary. And not only that, but if you add too much, it actually causes a problem. I'm real sure it's a real common myth, and a lot of people do this, but not in what the plants need is an all-purpose fertilizer. It's got nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, all these important things. Magnesium, Epsom salts are just a minor element. So just a good all-purpose fertilizer thrown up under the plants, and forget the Epsom salts. You got plenty in your dirt, I guarantee you. Beg your pardon?
I said, okie doke.
All right.
I do thank you, Carolyn. I do love y'all's show.
Well, thanks for being part of it.
Have a wonderful Easter.
Thanks for being part of it, Jan.
Okay. Bye-bye.
John, we ought to do a whole program just on garden myths. People will swear by this stuff. And I know what they're saying, and you go online, like eggshells. Eggshells add calcium to soil. You go online, and 99 out of 100 articles saying eggshells are great, Epsom salts are great. But if you dig into the science, it's a myth.
It's just like sports and superstitions, you know. Whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah, except in the case of some horticulture stuff, it causes problems. But anyway, a lot of people say, oh, Felder, you're an idiot. Well, I am, but not about Epsom salts. Sorry. Anyway, let's go slide up to central Mississippi to Jackson. Talk with Lizzie. Good morning, Lizzie. Howdy.
Good morning. I love your show and appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of questions. I want a low-maintenance yard. During the freeze and the drought and the pine beetles, I lost three huge pine trees. My yard was kind of torn up when they cut that down, and I lost a lot of trees in the bushes in the freeze. So I wondered if you could give me a real good low-maintenance, you know, freeze, drought-resistant bush, because I want to plant them, and I've got sun and shade.
Okay,
And one other question, too. The best perennial bulbs, you know, the most hardy that would be good for me to put in my yard.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No. Don't go anywhere. Because this is a good question. Keep in mind, over the decades, I was raised in a garden in a nursery family. I planted and take care, and I've diagnosed people's problems in the yard for over 40 years. And I can tell you that some of the toughest, most unkillable, indestructible plants, things that whatever killed the dinosaurs couldn't kill, I lost last year in my own garden. So I'm just saying that don't feel bad about you losing stuff. We all did. The governor did. There are plants in cemeteries that die because of the drought. So don't give up is what I'm saying. Over the years, I've developed some little handout type things, a publication. I call them brochures. One is on hardy bulbs, the kind of bulbs that you see in small towns and country gardens for decades, no care at all. The best roses that you see in old cemeteries, the hardiest plants, the things that bloom in the middle of the worst winter. And I have lists of those. And if you'll shoot me an email, I'll send it. I send these out all the time. Just send me an email on tough plants, hardy bulbs. And I have one publication called Plants That Dead People Can Grow that I see in cemeteries. Okay, that look good in yards. So, yeah, I can name 15 off the top of my head, but and all of them are common as muck. But you may not like them because of your personal style. So send me an email. I would say take your time and relax a little bit. Ride around the old part of town. See what's doing well in gardens that look nice but haven't had a whole lot of extra care. And you'll start seeing some of the same ones over and over, like Nandinas, some camellias, hollies. You know, as far as perennials, we got daffodils that bloom really well. We've got right now there's phloxes blooming. We've got amaryllis coming up. We'll have daylilies and cannas. In the fall and summer, we'll have naked ladies. So many, many good plants. I'd hate to say one because I don't want people to think I got a favorite.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. When you mentioned the holly, does holly grow in shade? Will it grow in shade?
Yeah.
Okay, or
yeah.
not?
Yeah.
Oh, it will? Okay. Will it make the berries?
Now, keep in mind, there's probably 15 hollies growing in Jackson alone, different kinds, you know, yopons. I would avoid any kind of holly that's got the word Japanese in the name. Not because Japanese plants are bad, but Japanese hollies are real popular landscapers because they look like boxwoods, but they suffered terribly in that drought last year. But we've got a whole bunch of good ones. Anyway, email me from my list, and the email is really, really easy. Go to my blog, felderrushing.blog. It's not an email. It's a website. Just type in felderrushing.blog and scroll down. It's got a little thing that says email me.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much.
You
I
bet.
Love it.
And keep in mind, keep
I
in
appreciate-
keep in mind, I lost magnolia trees last year. I lost an 80-year-old clearance.
I lost two.
Yeah. But we're not talking about you. We're talking about me here.
Oh goodness!
I wrote the book and mine died. But here's what I did.
Yeah.
Here's what I did. I spray painted it glossy black and it looked so pretty. And when the leaves finally fell off, I bobbed the stems back to finger length and I put bottles on it.
Oh, cute idea!
It
okay.
worked. It worked. Anyway, felderrushing.blog. Email me.
Thank you and happy Easter. And I appreciate it very much. Have a good day. Bye.
Job, I just spent 5 minutes not answering her question. How'd I do?
Well, the one thing I will say that you had to, you know, push the point home for her and all of the listeners, even me, even my things, you know, bit the dust.
I lost a Yaupon holly that's 25 years old. They're unkillable. I lost a magnolia, unkillable. Lost a clearer, unkillable in my garden. And not because of something I did or didn't do, because of bad weather. So, anyway, there's just too many plants for me to rattle off a list.
Now, we have really ate up the first half of the show, if you can believe it, man.
We did. And by the way, might want to mention this. There's a lot of stuff going on. This next weekend is going to be the big plant swap in Mobile, Alabama. It's a big plant swap, and it's free. It starts at 10 o'clock. It's at the Central Presbyterian Community Church Garden there in Mobile at Dauphin and St. Anne. We'll talk about this next week, but it's a really, really fun event. I had so much fun at the Flora Library plant swap yesterday, the oldest known plant swap in the universe. We had a bunch of really weird plants, a bunch of really weird people all in one room, and we got along. So anyway, we're going to take a break, come back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here at Mississippi Public Broadcasting. And I'm hoping that because it thundered in February, we're not going to get snow in April. Don't know. But this is a weekend where people traditionally plant stuff. I've been to a lot of garden centers, retail, wholesale growers, a lot of cool stuff out there right now. And it's about time to plant. So the main thing is when you plant, dig a wide hole, loosen up their even little zinnia plants and tomato plants, loosen up those roots a little bit when you put them in the dirt so they get started out in your dirt really, really well. And by the way, I know that I'm saying dirt. I get in a lot of trouble, Java, because it's supposed to be soil.
Well, that's what they sell at the store, the soil.
Yeah, soil. But see, we're from the South. How do you say soil? Soil. Soil. And it turns out soil is French, soilier, for dirt, which is English for soil. So it's okay. But some people make you feel bad if you say herb instead of herb or dirt instead of soil. I know what I'm talking about, which brings me up to...
And now, questions. I don't forgot now. Unasked answers to questions never asked.
You know,
there we go.
Somebody put on Mississippi Gardening Facebook, how do you pronounce zinnia? Zinnia, 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 and got 78 comments on how to pronounce zinnia, which is a common flower. By the way, the old folk name for it, in English, is old maids. We're not going to say I'm planting a bunch of old maids this weekend. It's zinnia. Anyway, how do you pronounce it? Well, here's the deal. It's named after a German botanist named Zinn, Z-I-N-N. That was his name. And when you put I-A on the end of a plant, that's an honorific thing. You know, zinnia, named honoring Dr. Zinn. Azalea, you know, things like that. They're honorific. So you take somebody's name, put I on the end of it. It could be Felderderia or Javaiana, you know. But anyway, here's the deal. Classical Latin, which, you know, the Romans spoke, there were no rules. They spoke just like you and me. You know, when we open our mouth in California or New York, they make fun of us, but they know what we're saying. So classical Latin was spoken with accents and southern and northern and drawls and all that, and everybody understood. They're just talking. But then the ecclesiastical folks came along and said, well, it's got to be this way or that way. It's camellia, not camellia. You know, that kind of... fancy people gushed it up to make themselves important. But now we're back to what we call botanical Latin, which is ecclesiastical. There are no rules. If you want to say zinnia or zinnia or zinnia or however you want to say it, daffodil, narcissus, paper, whatever you want to call it, as long as we know what we're talking about, it's okay. So botanical Latin, there are no hard rules. If you want to say zinnia or zinnia, fine. Not that big a deal. If anybody turns a nose up, their ecclesiastical nose at you, they can just go home.
Because what happens is you say zinnia, I say zinnia.
Yeah, potato, potato.
But when we look at the flower, this.
That's right. You know, if I'm giving a talk at a garden club, let's say in England, I say oregano. They don't know what I'm talking about. I have to say oregano and tomato and potato. But so that's the thing is. So anyway, 78 comments on how to pronounce zinnia. I'm thinking, come on, folks. It's old maids and we know it.
Not how you pronounce it. Can you grow it?
There you go. And this is the time to do it. You just throw the seeds on top of the ground and they grow. So anyway, and I say herb because it's got an H in it. The French say herb. By the way, I've got a pot full there that I brought in. That whole pot, I don't know if you could tell, that's an old porcelain wash pot that my grandmother used to put in her sink and fill it with water and wash her dishes with.
I see it now with the lid, and it has kind of the red trim on it.
It got a little red rim around it, you know. And she had a chamber pot that matched the same thing, by the way. But it had a hole in the bottom. She just threw it away, and I'm saying, no, Granny, that's a good So I've got that wash pot, ceramic, porcelain. I can't remember. Anyway, porcelain. It got a hole in box. I put some potting soil in it, and I've got a little rosemary plant. I've got oregano plant. I've got thyme casting over the side. I've got parsley in it. There's some really colorful Swiss chard. I've got a blooming pansy all in one pot. So anybody can have a garden. I've got an entire herb garden right there.
It looks really fancy, too. And then I want you to notice you said potting soil and not potting dirt. I have some potting dirt. You said potting soil.
I'm doing a little code switching there. But notice one last thing about this. I got all those plants and they're colorful, different shapes and textures. They're all crammed in there. But notice those tall, skinny things in there?
Yeah. What are those?
That's crepe myrtle branches. I spray painted green because it just looked pretty.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, you put something spiky, something roundy, something frilly, and something floppy over the edge, and then you accessorize. So,
all we're missing is the little mini bottles.
A little mini bottle or a gnome.
There's such thing as overkill, too.
Over-accessorize. The point is, if you've got children or you live in a small place where you can't garden, you don't feel like gardening, you get you any kind of pot, fill it with some potting soil, and just cram a bunch of plants in it and accessorize it. If you cram a bunch of plants in there, it looks like you know what you're doing. And if something dies, nobody can tell. So instead of having five pots with five plants in each, put five plants in one big old pot, and it sure does look good. So anyway, let's get back to our business. Let's go up to Oxford and talk with Charlie. Good morning, Charlie. Is it Charlie or Charlie?
No, it's Charlie.
Okay. Lafayette or Lafayette County, right?
However you want.
That's right. What's up?
Man, we've lived in our house for four springs now, and the first spring, our azaleas were just popping, you know?
Yep.
And then ever since then, they've just looked awful. And I've fertilized, not, you know, too much. I've pruned thoughtfully, not just shaving it, you know, off the top and the side. And they just look terrible. And I know part of it is, you know, the buds will come out and then there's a freeze. But the leaves are small. The leaves are not green, you know? And I just don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, you might not be doing anything wrong. It could just be bad weather. You know, a lot of people have great-looking plants in my neighborhood. A lot of people have plants that are dead as a doorknob, same plants. Some have plants that are not dead, but they ought to be. They look so bad. So a lot of it has to do with the individual plant and whether it's planted up next to the foundation, which is not really good soil, dirt.
Right.
But a whole lot of it has to do with how the plant was planted, how old it is, what kind of soil you've got, whether it's rain, you know, all that kind of stuff. Are going to affect individual plants, even on one side of the porch and not on the other. See, so there's a lot of factors there. All we can do, Charlie, seriously, if a plant doesn't look great, as soon as it gets through blooming, it's called rejuvenation pruning. I've done it a jillion times. You can cut it back to a foot tall if you want to, just knuckles, and they'll sprout out stronger than ever. And then you snip the tips off that new growth sometime in middle of the summer, and it will bush out and branch out, and the plants will be back to normal again. It's just called rejuvenation. But
when it sends up those tall, straight spikes,
yeah,
you have to quit those. What, not like during the summer, not in the
fall
time, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's the deal.
Okay.
Wherever you make a cut, whether it's on something big around your thigh or your finger or that little skinny stuff, wherever you make a cut, the new growth comes out right there. See, so when you cut them back pretty hard, they're going to send up all these tall shoots. And if you don't do anything, they just get tall and skinny. But when they come out a few inches long, if you just snip the tips off of them instead of shooting up tall, they will branch out. And you can do that once or twice. The main thing is don't prune spring bloomers like azaleas past around the middle of the end of July, because after then the new growth makes flower buds for next year. So prune them hard as you want, tip prune the new growth, and then go back out sometime in July and just lightly snip the new growth one more time, and they'll do fine.
Okay. One more thing. What is the lifespan of a rose of Sharon? Because these things grow up and they're beautiful and then they just die.
What a good question. I've got a rose of Sharon, which to some people they call them Altheas, but the same plant. I've got one that I planted back in the 1980s at the Agriculture Museum, and it's finally petering out. But I've seen some that are older than that. Some don't make it that long. Again, it depends on how it was planted, what kind of dirt you've got, that kind of stuff. So, but they can live for many, 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 many decades. They just need cutting back every now and then.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks, Felder. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. One last thing, Charlotte. Look at the new growth. When the new growth comes out, I bet it looks nice and clean. A lot of people are looking at plants now. They're looking at camellias, azaleas, hollies. They're looking at last year's leaves, which had a tough time, and they're going to shed when the new growth comes out. So make sure you're looking at the new growth, not last year's stuff, because that's junk.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Charlie.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, slide back to Brandon. Hi, Cindy. Good morning.
Your wash pot looked great yesterday with all those flowers in it.
Oh, were you at the plant swap?
Yeah, I was. It looked really good. The way everything you had in there was wonderful looking.
And what you couldn't tell was what I put in there that died, because it had so much other stuff you couldn't tell. But you did see that I like to put spray painted sticks in my flower pots.
But it really made it look good.
Well, thank you.
Anyway,
appreciate it.
What I'm calling about is my centipede. There's all this thatch in there. Of course, It looks, when you start pulling it back, it looks like there's not any grass. Does it get diseases and stuff?
Well, centipede, St. Augustine, they're more sensitive than Bermuda grass or zoysia because they grow on top of the ground. They arch over the top of the ground instead of having underground runners. And they're more susceptible to cold weather, to hard freezes, to being mowed too close, to extreme drought, that kind of stuff. And they get more diseases. And last year's weather was tough. It rained nonstop in the spring, and it turned off. We went 5 months with no rain. All this stuff is tough on Asian turf grasses. They really don't like this kind of weather. So not much you could do right now. I would not worry about the thatch. We used to say you need to dethatch your lawn. That's based on northern grasses. Our southern grasses, that thatch is mostly leaves and stems, and they decompose and actually feed the worms, which help you have deeper roots. So don't worry about the thatch. Let's just see if it greens up. Should be starting to green up about now. We're seeing some green growth, but it's a little bit early to tell whether you got much winter damage or last summer's fall. So let's just give it another couple of weeks. Raise your mower up. Let's see what it looks like.
Because I really hadn't noted short or anything.
Well, again, centipede, St. Augustine, they're not from this continent.
Yeah.
And they don't like extreme weather. And we had extreme weather the past 18 months. Three or four extreme things. Each one of them is enough to kick it. But back to back, it's been tough on a lot of lawns. I'm seeing a lot of damaged lawns. Mohai, sometime in April, if you go to a garden center and get this stuff called centipede food, the first and third number will be the same with a zero middle.
I've got that kind of fertilizer.
If you'll use it and don't put it on too thick, but sometime in April, just throw a little centipede food out there and just mow and let's see what happens. And then we can take it. There's not any kind of treatment other than that is what I'm saying.
Right. And if it would have a disease and you have to replace it, is what's in the ground gonna, you know, mess up new sod?
No, most of the time the fungi, the brown patch and that affects these grasses, it's usually a temporary thing. It's just like cold germs. We all have cold germs. We don't always have colds. And when you get a cold, there's not much treatment for it anyway. You just got to outlast it and try to stay healthy and, you know, wear a hat. You know, don't go out with wet hair and all that kind of stuff. But other than fertilizing and mowing high and a good soaking, if you can, at least once a month in the sun. If we go 2 months without rain, the grass can't replace itself. So a good deep soaking for rain or hose, I'm going to say at least once a month, is really, really helpful. But fertilizer, mow high, good soaking every 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. That's about all we can do. And I wouldn't worry about spraying for any kind of disease or anything.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Y'all have a good weekend.
Thank you, Cindy. You too.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All righty. Well, let me see. I might want to mention that again, that next Saturday, the 6th, April the 6th, it's going to be a plant swap in Mobile. It's a big thing. It's free. It's a lot of fun. There's always extra plants. It's going to start at 10 o'clock at the Central Presbyterian Church Community Garden, Dolphin and St. Anne. And Java, in 2 weeks, you and I, on the 12th, are broadcasting live from Clarksdale.
From Ms. Nails, right?
That's right, right. I'm giving a talk the afternoon before at 3 o'clock on Thursday, April 11th, but we're going to be broadcasting from and I don't know the whole thing for it, Crossroads. Is it Crossroads Blues Festival or just Crossroads?
Oh, it's Juke Joint.
Juke Joint.
Juke Joint. Yeah, Blues Festival. It's a beautiful festival. Clarksdale opens the door wide open and everybody comes in.
Yes, and not just music. It's not just tamales, but me and Java broadcasting live.
There you go.
So got a few other things coming up, but that'll get us through the next week or two. If you've got some events that I can help promote, give us a call. Shoot us an email, and we'll be glad to help with that. So this is a weekend to start thinking about planting. If you don't feel like planting, go ahead and turn some dirt over. My little granddaughter, Allie, she's 3, almost 3 and a half, and we started turning over some dirt for her own little bitty garden, about the size of two coffee table tops. We turned the dirt over and found some big old worms. I got a picture of her holding a worm up in front of her face. And her dad's overseas. He's deployed as an Army major. And while he's gone, I'm teaching her to like worms. Gonna ruin her, I hope. All righty, welcome back, folks. Let's go down to the Gulf Coast and talk with Hugh. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And yourself?
So far, so good. Not so bad.
All right, it's still early. So I got some free plants that I bought soil, put them in pots before I put them in the ground, you know.
Yeah.
And so there were 4 of them. And then while I was waiting to put them in the ground, 2 of them, I suppose they're ant larvae. I don't think it's necessarily termite season yet, but 2 of them are full of these little white ant larvae. My wife came in and said, I think there's maggots in your plants, you know, and I probably not, but they might be anyway. I put one in the ground and put the dirt in a wheelbarrow thinking, well, as it dries out and heats up, it'll kill the little larvae.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still in there. Is that dirt usable anymore, or do I just spread it out and let the larvae do their thing? Or,
well, first of all, did you have some ants in there too?
No, it's just
okay.
All
well, that's more likely to be termites then. Termites look like they're little white things. And I tell you how you can tell a termite larvae, they don't have waists. They're just little chunky, look like grains of rice. You know, they're chunky looking things. Ain't got a little skinny waist like a wasp. And a lot of times you get termites in if potting soil has been piled up, you know, the bark and all, sometimes you'll get those in there. But it wouldn't be ants. If you don't have ants, you know, they carry them around. They don't. The larvae don't live on their own. So I would suspect termites or something. Well, without looking at it, now that's just an educated guess. Without looking at it, that's most likely a little grain of dried rice type looking things.
Yeah, they're just little white things wiggling, you know, and they haven't hatched. I thought sooner or later, you know, because I've seen ants in plants, you know.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, if it's possible to get a good clear, a nice good clear close-up, maybe with a penny by it or nickel or something like that by it, and send it to me, I can probably identify it. Because it could be something, it could actually be something beneficial. But if there's lots of them and they're moving around, that would be more likely to be termites than anything. But anyway, to answer, answer your question, you know, usually it's not a big deal. Matter of fact, you put termites out there, a lot of times fire ants will come in and eat the termites. Fire ants are actually beneficial that way.
Maybe I want to put it. Maybe I want to use that dirt in the hole.
Yeah, if you're worried about, you know, let's get a positive ID, because it actually could be the larvae of something beneficial. But if there's a lot of them, I would suspect termites.
There's lots of them.
Yeah. See if you can get a picture and send it to me.
Fire ants and termites.
Yeah.
Okay, so send it to like your email on
No. Go to felderrushing.blog. It's a website, and then scroll down. It says email me.
Felderrushing.blog.
Yeah, and then let's find, because I'm curious now, and we need to find out for sure. And if they're termites, by the way, they're kind of nutty flavored. You could eat them. I'm just saying.
Really?
I'm just saying.
Really?
Who would make that up? Java almost choked when I said that.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, Felder, come on, man, come on now.
Yeah,
come on.
Because some people believe what you say. You know?
This is true. Just depending on whether you're hangry or not. But termites are perfectly edible, a little nutty flavored thing. I'm just saying. That's all.
Well, like I said, I'm doing well so far, so good. You know.
Let's find out what it
all
is.
All right.
Appreciate it, Hugh. Thank you, man.
All right.
Okay, now let's talk to Will. He's in Carthage. Good morning, Will. What's up?
Hey, I was just wondering, I know they're about to plant a lot of stuff, but the soil temperature, don't the temperature have to be like 70 before you plant stuff like okras or watermelons, stuff like that?
It doesn't have to be in the 70s, but the warmer the better. You know, right now the soil temperature is probably in the 50s, and that's really, it's cold for roots, for summertime roots, and they're more likely, if we have a rain, for it to be cold, and that can cause stunted roots and diseases. So rather than worry about the soil temperature, let's just say it's too early right now. Usually we say Good Friday, but I like to say first part, middle of April, and we're almost there. But you're right. Soil temperature does affect how well plant root grow. And we got until August the 7th to plant a summer garden and get a harvest before fall. So don't rush. Another couple of weeks or so, it'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Oh, wait. Appreciate your call, Will. Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Soil temperature there. He said it. Bilingual. Dirt. Is your dirt still cold? Yep, my soil temperature is fine. Let's go to Brandon. Teresa, thank you for holding. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, now, I'm Teresa from the last time I called was with the bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, I'm taking over my mother's garden. So I planted some English ivy, mm-hmm. and it has grown up an 80-foot tree. So yeah. We cut the tree down. So anyway,
Wait. Because of the ivy, or because you just need the tree gone?
Because of the ivy. I thought it would pass over to another tree, and I would have just some.
I can show you. You know, I stay in England part of the year. English ivy, I see it growing up in trees that are 200 years old. Ivy does not hurt a tree. If you've got a problem with the tree, like termites or there's a hole or something, you won't be able to see it. But the ivy doesn't hurt the trees. It just doesn't. It is kind of cool. Matter of fact, when it hangs down off the limbs, it gets bigger leaves, and it'll flower and have little berries and stuff. Anyway, ivy doesn't hurt a tree. That's a myth.
Okay. Well, it's growing up another tree, so I should just let it go, huh?
Well, you can let it go, or else you could just every few years just cut it off right at the base of the tree and let it start back over again.
Okay.
Either way you want to go, but poor old tree. It had a woodpecker stand on his head, and you said, "Oh, it's out of here."
Well, okay. The problem is now that the tree is down on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Will the ivy start growing from there?
The ivy's gonna have roots in the dirt. So you know, yeah. You follow it back to where it's starting to grow, and if you want to cut it off there and let it start, everything you cut off will turn brown, die, and it'll sprout back out. Just like a bush, you can cut it off close to the ground and get it started over again. But I think ivy is kind of a cool thing. You have it and it'll hide all those. You're not hauling the tree stumps off, are you?
Yeah, that's what we're asking to do. Do we need to cut the tree up and calling it off.
You can do that, but if you've got a big enough yard, you can just have him push it over to a side and let ivy grow on top of it and have all sorts of really cool wildlife growing in there. You know, these little pollinating bees that we need, people talk about native pollinators, they live in stuff like that. And
yes.
I even have an area in my yard, Teresa, that's called a stumpery. You know, some people have a rock garden, they pile up rocks and plant cactus. I've got a pile of stumps that I put ferns and ivy and stuff around it. So, you know, you don't have to haul it off. You know, just push it out of the way so you don't have to worry about snakes jumping out on you.
Okay. We'll do that.
Okay.
That'll save us some time.
It'll add a little bit of money, too, and a little landfill space. So, you know, in Europe, they don't have people haul stuff off. They just push it all in a pile and let ivy cover it up.
Okay.
That works.
Thank you.
Okay, Teresa, thank you for your call.
Okay.
You know, some of the stuff, Job, I say is controversial, you know.
But you say it anyway.
Yeah, well, they say ivy will kill a tree. Well, I helped teach the tree care course at Mississippi State. Ivy doesn't kill trees.
Well, that would be categorized as one of the myths, though.
That's right. There's a whole, but we need to do a whole, we need to tape a thing for when, you know, there's a holiday or something. Nothing but garden myths. That'll honk a lot of people off.
We would have to break it down. I hate to dispel the myths with the science, because sometimes the myths are so fun.
Yeah,
you know?
I know. But, you know, I tell you one thing that's a myth. If it thunders in February, does not mean it's going to snow in April.
I have never heard that one.
It's all the time.
That's a big one.
Well, here's something that is true. I saw this myself. When you see a buzzard eating a dead possum on the side of the road, it's time to plant. I've had fun today, Java. Welcome back.
It's been a good one, man. And happy Easter.
Thank you, Easter too. Easter. I hope your kids hide the Easter eggs really, really well, so you don't find some until the middle of the sermon. They're really stinky when they find them.
All plastic Easter eggs in my house.
There you go. It is a beautiful weekend, folks. Hope you take advantage of it. If you don't feel like planting, at least turn some dirt over. Go to a garden center. Pick some plants out. I got some plants yesterday. I'm not going to plant them just yet, but they sure do look pretty in their pot sitting on the table out in my yard. So, you know, play with them a little bit before you put them in the yard. If you get a chance, farmers markets are kicking off. There's a lot of interesting people growing interesting stuff and making interesting things to share with you at farmers market. Take a kid there or take them to a garden center. Get them a pot, get them some herbs, get them some stuff, and show them how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand. Thank you.